I'll call this meeting to order. Betty is not available today. She has a workshop scheduled that she's running, so she can't be here today. We've got a very full agenda, so we've got a number of guest speakers and people are coming in. Chancellor will be here today. With him will be Brad Loveland to talk about the training, new training website, some of the required trainings and stuff. Also about the bullying awareness training that we've had that resolution for a little while. And so he'll talk more about that. And then we also have Eric Seastad here from UA, the statewide HR office, to talk about criminal policy and things that are going on with that. So very full agenda. We just have to try and fit everything in. I'm going to try and keep it as short as possible today so we have lots of time to meet the people that are coming to visit us. We'll start with roll call.
Chris Beck.
Here.
Bigelow. Red Chris. Adam Kinney.
No, Adam's no longer on staff council. He sent me an email yesterday late afternoon, I think, right? And said that he is actually, as of October 3rd, he will be working for UN. So.
Sherry Walls. Leslie Walls. Jamie Ward. Jessica DeRochers.
I'm here.
Debbie Coxon. Jesse Atencio.
Here.
Lawrence Murakami.
Here.
Janine Smith. Jan Christensen. Jane Grossman.
Here.
Kim Eames. I've got Brandy Ruru from Milan.
Present.
Jeff Baxter.
Here.
Trish Winters.
Here.
Jessica McCallum. Jeanette Altman.
Present.
Nate Bauer. David Vance, proxy for Richard Machida.
Here.
Ed Voorhees, proxy for
Darrow.
Evelyn Binsgaard. Elena Brown. Tom Langdon. Tony Abbey.
We didn't vote on anything today. Let's push the vote off to the next meeting. Let's do that. And proceed at this point.
How many more do you need?
Just one. Wait. One more?
Oh, Brad doesn't count.
That's okay. Nice. Dang it. Jessica, anybody else on the phone?
Just me, I guess.
Just you, huh?
I guess, yeah.
If Adam doesn't count, then we do have a problem. Because we're down 23 minutes. We need to vote for
something. Okay. Well, Adam officially resigned yesterday. I mean, less than 24 hours ago, but.
Okay, then yeah, I didn't think about that.
Okay.
Then we have quorum.
Fairly, but we do? Okay. All right.
Good. I'm going to call the coup. Okay.
Thank you. Let's move to the agenda for today. I hear a motion.
So moved.
Okay, discussion. Stuff for the agenda for today. Hearing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? All right, we have an agenda. Move to 1D, approval of minutes from last meeting, meeting 252 for August. I hear a motion.
Okay.
Okay. Discussion. Hearing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? All right. That is approved. Move to status of pending action. The leave share resolution is still with the other two staff councils. I know UAA has looked at that and is actually asking for some feedback from their members. I am not sure where this is with UAS, since last time I checked, UAS doesn't actually have a presence for staff council at this point. And so they were hoping to have one by the end of this week, but without that, they really haven't had a meeting this semester yet. So I'm hoping that they will, and that in their next meeting, they will look at this and support us in this. But so far, they haven't done that yet, so they haven't had it. B, term-funded internal applicant policy. I hope you guys had a chance to look this over. At this point, this came back from HR with its current language in draft form, and in talking with the chancellor, he's satisfied with this policy. I think this is a major accomplishment for this body, for this council, because while this has been in practice, according to the chancellor, that informally, and he's done this in an email, and he's encouraged people, managers and supervisors in meetings to do this and look at this list. This makes it official. This puts it in writing that term employees are part of the layoff list and have internal applying privileges. And that is because of what we asked for. It's taken a while. It's taken several months to make this happen. So what the chancellor's asked me to do is bring this forward and get feedback from us on this policy. And if no changes are added, he's ready to sign. So any feedback?
I'll speak. So one thing that had been discussed in relation to hiring is an incentive, like cutting back on the amount of time before the on-hold period. So there was nothing in there. I am very much in favor of these people being considered as an internal applicant. And I see they must apply within 30 days, and that's out there internal for 1 year. So the one addition would be the extra incentive of the on-hold, reducing the on-hold time some amount.
And I think that that's a different policy already, but I'll double check. Because that's the whole on hold time isn't supposed to be kind of fact. I mean, if we were in a normal budget climate, then there wouldn't be a hold time period.
But after a couple years.
Exactly. But I will check on that.
Yeah, and this one, they're putting it on internal applicant, where I don't know how that whole time applies to that.
Internal applicants are supposed, if you hire from the internal applicant pool, it's 45 days.
Okay, if that already applies, then that is great.
Yeah.
So just clarification, I guess. I will find
the policy, because if it's not, if that isn't, in writing somewhere, we'll see if we can get that out of it. Yes.
But I really like it. Just
good.
One more. <Yeah.
laughs> I don't know if it's in writing anywhere else, Chris, but I think it was in the email from the Chancellor at the beginning of this fiscal year where he described some of the budget impact for FY15. I think that's what we went down.
I think in July. But I will, like I said, I don't know if this is, if that's written anywhere in a policy curve, but I'll find it. Anybody else? Any other comments, questions?
No, on that subject, I wanted to, you know, congratulate the council for bringing that forward. And of course, David went up with, you know, instrumental in bringing that forward to me in the beginning. So I heard, you know, it was good that talking with him got him to really push that. And, of course, I was interested because next week I will be a 24-year term once in place. Yes.
Thanks for bringing that up, Jesse, because we're not done. We're not done. It's a slow-moving process, but we want to find out.
Yeah.
How can you be?
I'm at the ridiculous phase on this thing. So,
okay.
Yeah. So I mean, that's 24 years ago.
How can you be a term-funded employee for 24 years? I mean, I'm glad
maybe you're past that because I'm at over 5 years with my period.
And so we're asking some questions from HR regarding that. Lawrence's committee has put together a nice list of questions that we've asked again from HR, and I'm going to hold Brad Lee here today. I'm going to make sure he's going to provide an answer to those. Some of those they probably don't necessarily want to. We've had questions or answers before saying, well, we can't find that, or that's a difficult number to get, but we're going to get some numbers for you. See. Like I said, we haven't dropped this yet. I think we'd like to go a little further. There is an ad hoc committee on this. I'm sure they wouldn't mind having an cool. Thank you. Other feedback, comments, questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Excuse me, because I'm a little bit behind because I'm new. I read in the minutes from last month's meeting that the supervisors and managers have been verbally instructed that they are required to look at this list prior to beginning recruiting. Is there anywhere in writing that says they are now going to be required to look at the internal applicant list before they hire for a job, term funded or otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that still like an unspoken verbal?
This is what that does.
Okay.
This policy here does that.
Okay.
Yeah, like I said, this is, we were hoping to see this earlier than today in writing and actually officially ready to be signed by the Chancellor. But yeah, it's been a verbal practice for a number of months, according to the Chancellor.
Okay.
And my department, my manager is hiring, and I know he's looked at that list. So. And he's actually confirmed for me that there are the term funded applicants that were laid off or weren't renewed are actually in that pool.
I don't actually see in the attachment part that it could see a regular hire.
No, I didn't see that either. That's why I was asking if that was going to be part of it, that they are required to look at this list.
Standalone policy.
That says the list.
Without further whatever you could ignore.
Well, there's the line under the responsibilities for UAF HR consultants. They notify hiring authorities and internal applicants of the pool for consideration prior to a benefit of recruitment being posted for competitive recruitment.
Okay.
Yeah, there are. I was reading that as before it gets posted outside of the university, they would need to be notified of this list.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's actually a big case, plus it's already
that the counselor goes with this board and he really does spell out a term limit, both of the specific period or project, and as you know, the
yep.
So, just having this wording argument, getting a sample of people to come to the policy, that already gets us.
Yeah, absolutely. The chancellor said it. That's many words that he's ready to sign. But he wants, I mean, he, since we brought it up, he goes, well, here's, you guys, you know, this is what you want. This has been to HR and back, to the chancellor's office and back, and this is what they handed us and said, this is our draft, our final draft. Tell us what you think. So. Comments, questions?
One question I have is so the timeline. So an applicant has to apply, or someone has to apply to school within 30 days of non-renewal.
Yeah.
And then the supervisor and the UAF HR consultant are required to notify the employee. But it doesn't say exactly when. You know, we have a sense of what, is it 30 days before the non-renewal they get notified, or, you know, is it possible that someone could be notified, say, 10 days before they're going to be non-renewed, and then they're only going to have a few days to get this application in?
This is my understanding of this was after you no longer have a job, you have 30 days to get your name in the applicant pool.
Right.
This was not addressing notification. You're not.
Well,
which is actually on my list of things to come.
Well, under the supervisor responsibility, that's the unit leadership, and the supervisor must ensure unit leadership and UAF HR consultants are notified in writing of the non-renewal, but it doesn't say exactly when, and then we'll initiate the meeting with the UAF HR consultant and the employee to deliver notification. So I guess my question is, when could that come, you know, a day before the non-renewal? And I guess then hopefully they would still get to be told, but is there a possibility to get missed?
The way I was reading this was separate from notifying the employee.
I think maybe
this
what
is notifying HR consultant and unit leadership. It doesn't say you're notifying the employee.
Well, the next
under
then
the I was next one under HR consultant.
Yeah, the HR consultant has the responsibility to notify the employee that the pool exists and that's going to be
possible. Right. But all of these things, my reading was these are after you no longer have a job. So not a day before. Or maybe a day before, but at the time. A separate thing that we had heard had a verbal is that employees would receive a 30-day notification of non-renewal. And I've actually, it's working. I've received two in the last 3 months. So, yeah, I guess, okay, that's great. That's clarification. So at the time I'm notified of non-renewal, it would be nice to know that there is this pool. And if it's 30 days prior to the end of non-renewal, then I have 60 days to get myself on this pool.
But I think I see what you're saying. It's, you know, as long as you're notified, even if it's at the, you know, on the day of non-renewal, then, you know, as long as the notification happens, then that's part of this.
Yeah. Yeah, and I could see a letter like that being modified to include a notification about a tool like that. You know, remember, this is draft policy, it's not official policy.
Okay. So let's just add that as a comment that my understanding was that 30-day notification prior to non-renewal to the employee is still informal too. This doesn't necessarily address it, but could be possibly expanded to address it right there in our supervisor section.
Right.
At the line before, the employee's notified 30 days. Take care of two things with one call.
Yeah.
So if anybody doesn't mind, we could do an informal poll. How many term funded people are sitting here right now? Almost a quarter. 20%.
I have a list. Oh, all the temporary people.
Temporary
is not the same as term funded. Oh, that's true.
Temporary is different than term funded.
Yeah, because in fact we have a weird thing. I mean, term funded regular, not temporary. Right?
It's a permanent. Yeah, it's a permanent.
Yeah. We're term funded, which is part of our issue.
Well, that's exactly why we're trying to ask for clarification.
Yeah. Hey, Todd.
Cool. So I will take this back to the chancellor with those questions and find out and report back on the next meeting. Sound good? Other questions?
But also, thank him for having some writing for us to look at.
Yeah. Excellent. Cool. CND, the Boolean Awareness Training Resolution. I've been told that it is ready. However, Brad Loblin will talk more about that as well as the Chancellor. One day when we get there. And the emergency leave policy is close to have a solution. The Chancellor will talk more about that. But it sounds like it is in the trend of adding two additional days to sick leave for a year that employees can use during emergency or weather closing, so they know it's coming. There are a few things that they're trying to work out. One of those being that employees that don't have any sick leave left, how do you work with that? And so that's kind of written out policy-wise. They're still working on that, but the Chancellor will talk more about that when he gets here. And so, anyway, it's close to being resolved. They're hoping to have this ready and going in the next month or so that it's ready for this conference. Any questions on that? Jess will have more. So. Okay. Let's move to anybody for public comment. Go ahead.
So I just wanted to let you guys know something that's going on. I'm part of a training initiative working named TED, and it stands for Training and Employee Development. A vision of five-year initiatives. Our mission is to implement a comprehensive, accessible, and innovative training program empowering UAS employees to pursue career development or career change, accomplished through partnering with experts and providing a fair and relevant roadmap to attract goal and meaningful outcomes. So what I want to let you guys know about right now is over the next few weeks, you'll see emails from Vice Chancellor Pitney and our team asking for your help. As supervisors, employees, staff members, we will be gathering information. We're in the information gathering phase right now, and right now we need to know what types of trainings are offered, who's training, and other bits of information related to that. This first request will be going out to known trainers, supervisors that are involved in the safety training pilot group, and we're also trying to figure out points of contact like admins and department assistants that can help gather first bit of information. So we're not inundating everyone with the first request. And then the second request that will follow that will go out to everyone, and that one is trying to gather information where there might be gaps in training or specific needs. So just look out for that stuff, and you are hoping to get high participation.
Cool. Anybody else for public comment on the phone? Anybody?
A quick announcement.
Sure.
This is going out, but I heard from about it yesterday. The next admin services open forum is Wednesday, October 1st at 3:30 in the Murray Building.
Yep. Thank you. Letters, announcements, public comment? All right, moving on. Offices reports. I talked about a lot of it already. Talked about the emergency leave already. Everybody is supposed to complete the 509 training. I think you might hear the chancellor more about that as well. Because there will be a visit of the Office of Civil Rights on campus in October, and they might, they're going to do some focus groups, and if there is focus groups for staff, they are looking to us to kind of help organize that. When I talked to the chancellor, I didn't have a lot of detail at that time. I suspect he'll talk about that. If not, I'll ask about that because he's looking for some assistance maybe in making sure that we get enough people for focus groups in those meetings. But it'll happen, I believe, sometime early October. There should be a letter closure reminder email going out in early October. What letter closure is, how to, what our policy says. We have a policy on what emergency or letter closure does. We don't have a policy that says how you pay for that then, but we have a policy that says what emergency closures is. And so we'll see that beginning of October. And as well in December. Last meeting, I forget who asked the question, what, because TAP was dissolved, who actually now makes sure that the TAP funds are used for technology? Was that you, Tom? Who asked that question? I'm not sure. Who makes sure that those funds are actually being used? What was those, that technology, the student fee? Technology fee is being used for student technology. And so I asked that question. And what will happen is OIT, as well as the library, and the Versa is the other one that they've got part of that funding, will provide an annual report on how they disperse those funds and what they use them for. So, which will be public. That's the check and balance of that. I don't know if that's better or worse than the TAP board, but that's the solution. In planning and budget committee, one of their recommendations was to do annual cash, annual leave cash in, which will likely happen starting next year. Will be available to folks with grades 79 and lower. I think they can cash in up to 20 hours. I don't know exactly the details of that. That should be coming out in the next 2 months. But they're following through on that recommendation from funding the budget. And then last thing but not least is we got it initially in an informal email saying that the president was going to ask for a 3.1% salary increase based on the compensation working group that Brad chaired, their recommendations and their documentation. I saw that it was actually on the Board of Regents agenda last week that that was his recommendation with support of the chancellors. I don't know what comes from that, but that is what the president has recommended the board to do for FY 15. Or FY 16, actually. Sorry. We're in FY 15. And that's what I got for us to report. Questions?
So for the annual leave cash-in, am I correct in understanding that the change would be grade 79 and lower would be able to cash in 20 hours per year, down from 40, and then grade 80 and higher would no longer have any
correct
cash in?
Yeah. Okay. And that was it's a bit modified because that is not what planning and budget recommended, but leadership found that that the lower grades are the ones that were using that and probably needed more than the folks that are making 80 or above. Other questions, comments on the phone? Jessica, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
All right.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Are we doing anything about the code of conduct that Professor Campbell proposed for you?
Yeah, that code of conduct no longer exists.
Well, I know, but I mean, you know, it looks bad to lay people off. I know guys are certain left place.
Yeah.
Every year, Keith.
Someone's
going to know. Those may get laid off of fire and knows that, plus not, and put them pretty stupid.
I agree, and we'll talk about that actually under new business. That hasn't been dropped by the leadership, although the initial document that the president released, let's just say it wasn't received very well.
Well, he didn't present it very well, but I think it's just a simple thing. Like take the gears off the computers. You know, stop
watching right there. Yep, absolutely. So they have not dropped that. One of the things that was asked Staff Alliance is, can we come up with, you know, if you didn't like that code of conduct, and what would you like? Because we believe we have something needs to be said. A part of that is the UA core values that was created by Staff Alliance at this point. It's a draft. And so the chair of Staff Alliance, Monique Music, gave that to us and said, okay, this is an initial document, initial ideas. Here's what we've written down.
Could you put something that says we should work with the university? I read that and I didn't see anything about it.
No.
You know, in the pocket.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's too specific, personally, but we could talk about that.
What if I take breaks once a while? You know, that's fine, right? I think it's necessary. I don't care if it gets out. There's some of the tools that get out of what our machines do. They look pretty bad. They're about the president's salary. That's why they're here. Those guys are watching YouTube, and they don't watch Netflix all day long. It's not going to go over.
Right.
So it's kind of complicated because the second you say that X number of crafts is going to use university computers, like my office, student support center, that they learn how to fix computers by watching.
Yeah, well, YouTube, I agree. That's a good tool.
It's a great tool, but you have a good point that a lot of people do that. Don't monitor that. Could I'm not going to start putting it on people's computers without the chancellor telling me to do it. But I'm probably going to be pretty public about it. Just pretty public about what he's doing. But the thing with these value statements that I haven't really gotten a clear answer is how I know where they came from. The code of conduct happened. They wanted something different than that, so they came up with the value statement. What I haven't gotten good answer from anybody is how they're going to use these value statements to have the same effect as that connection hasn't been made for, I don't know if Chris, if you had any other meetings from the conversations you've had about it, but
no,
it
really.
Seems like a very arbitrary value statement, and while I agree with most of them, I don't understand how they would be used to pull people's feet to the fire or give people raises either end of the spectrum. If you're a problem employee or a rock star, I don't see how they're going to use these value statements to either give you a raise or move you out.
And I suggest to Carl what that would be, what we should do is, we got tools to get out of the police press report, but it's easier to put a report for much time. I mean, YouTube, there's a lot of education stuff for us. You can't really get on YouTube much anymore. But that's part of any training, that's a training video I've seen out here. If you do a report, you know, at least you do a top doctor. We're just the top 10 guys. You can never tell. Not a lot of resume stuff. If they just posted out with my staff IP address ring, or not doing stuff that's something related. But you can't say that 100% staff. That could be students at the, you know, at text desk doing stuff. So you're never going to get this thing down. But it does need to be in the press on.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that that's an issue. And I'm not sure there's a technology to monitor that. Solution, but
there is a room to wonder if it's that hard. You know, everything every machine is doing, they can do it.
Well, sure, but I'm not sure that
falls commercial or not productive.
Yeah.
These people, most of these people have supervisors, and they should be aware of what they're doing.
That, yeah.
That's where I would leave it.
Right. Well, and that's kind of what I think these core values. Are trying to, and none of this is set at all. This is all a draft initial idea. Even the name, I'm not too fond of UA core values. But none of that's set in stone. I mean, this is an idea, and Seth Lyons has asked us to look those over and give them feedback, rewrite them if we want. What the chancellor, who has also looked at these, has asked that we look at, because UAF has core values as well, that we at least look at those as well as the UA core values so that they're in line with each other, that they can work together. The thing that I think should also kind of be reflected in this is that they match kind of the goals for shaping Alaska's future as well. And if you can work that together, then I think that's a difficult thing to do. But then I can see maybe some kind of coherent idea and values going through that would prevent the stuff that you're talking about, or at least greatly reduce that. So, but I'd like you guys to look over that and give us some feedback on it. You guys look over this and tell me what you think. Suggest other ideas, other language, additions, and email to me or to Nicole. And I'll make sure that this is on the agenda for the next meeting as well. Because this is an initial start, it is my belief that if we don't do it, leadership will. And I am a firm believer that we can do that the way we'd like it to instead of having it the other way around. I think it would be great if we can provide a document that they can look over instead of the other way around. And that's what shared governance stuff. So,
Chris, the other thing I'd add to that is I think the timelines are a bit shorter than that.
And we can do that. So for those of you that are here, send me your ideas, send me language for that, additions, edits, and out of that, I will put together a document that that does that. And like I said, everything is up for even the title. In OIT has done something similar, our department. We call them OIT cultural beliefs, the culture that we believe lives in OIT, and they're tied to kind of what Trish was saying was kind of tied to some achievements, some goals, and how we've done that. If you're interested in how OIT has kind of fostered that culture, but I don't know about you guys, you can chime in if you want, but I think it has changed the culture of OIT. I think it's changed how we provide service to our customers at the university. And I think it really has changed. I don't know that we can go at the scale of an entire university, but I understand that we should try that. If you're interested in that, I'd be happy to send you links to that documentation. Cool. Yeah, I'll send it out.
Has there been a survey done to the staff for what they have a the employee just out to see if they have a solution? Maybe there's a bucket like you have a bank. Now, everybody takes little breaks and this stuff and checks the user and whether they're like, there's somebody who really abuses it. So maybe there's a staff to solve that.
Good morning. This is Ellen. I'm sorry I'm late.
Hi, Ellen. Thanks for joining us.
Had a doctor's appointment this morning.
Well, I'm glad you can make it.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else? I'm not doing a very good job here. Okay, these are good discussions. All right. Do we have any staff highlights, staff achievements? We set up a form for that, but we didn't receive any entries in that. Anybody that this is... This is meant to highlight some staff achievements, things that that staff has done that doesn't necessarily have to be at the university. Any accomplishments that they've done. Often the faculty that may present on a book or something like that that they've written. Anything. Anyone wants to highlight something? All right, I'm hoping to have something for next meeting. Chancellor's not here yet. Brad, you want to start? I don't know if the Chancellor had something together, but I don't know if you want to go before him.
Well, he asked me to come and sit there. So the Chancellor asked me to come. I'm Brad Lawman, the HR Director for the University. The Chancellor asked me to come today because she's going to be talking about the transplant policy and some other things, but the workplace bullying training is available, and so I have some handouts that I have for you today. If you could just take the two sheets and then pass it down. I figure I never come to staff council prepared. I would tell you I'll send it out. I thought this morning I would bring it. That way I can just do that. So we have three options for training. We have the online statewide video that you can go online and take that video. That's Ann Sakamoto, the director of statewide training and development. a very good video that was put together by her and general counsel. We also have a training that we created, Nate Marsh and I. Basically, it's the same training, we just UAF did a little. And we also are presenting that for findings this winter. Today is actually the first time that we'll be presenting it at 1 o'clock today, and we have no registered participants for today. We do need to push the message out that we have these trainings available. So one of the things that the associate director is working on today is getting a memo out to the university to say, here's where you can go to take these trainings, and here's how we're tracking them. There's also a third option, and that is we'll come to your department. We'll have specialized training, so if you have a big unit, you can call us. We will schedule a two-hour, one-hour training, come over and do the group. I like to train departments together because that way people are together and they get the same message. But it's all about options, and that's what we want to provide you with, the options. So we have the online video, we have in-person training, and the third one is an app for specialized training. We also are tracking this training. I believe that I do not know if it's mandatory for this year. I believe in FY16 we're going to start making mandatory for all employees. Right now, we're highly encouraging people to take the training, and people have reached out and asked for specialized training in the department. They think there's going to be a problem. Questions, concerns?
So you said there's a memo going out today?
A memo is being drafted today. I will get in front of the chancellor to review, and then I think we should have that out all in place. But here's what's available, and here's how you get there. We want to make this as accessible as
possible. So if departments are interested in contacting you for group participation, should they contact you before the end of the week?
They can contact any time. They can contact me in 20 minutes, and I'll work with you on the schedule. So, yeah, any time. Any questions, comments, concerns?
So the video presentation, you also use this conference. So you can go through that conference while you're watching the video.
And then there's also risk management practice for us. So people know that but right now it's not actually been officially required.
And you said it's going to be required next year?
Yeah, I mean, don't call me, please, until the actual chancellor's office puts out a directive, but it should be required. And that was the whole goal of extending what it's required for all. So the goal is FY15, just all the time, things like that. That's prepared, but again, I'm just not sure. I'll make that decision. I get hammered for
we've had a few
in the past couple months. Is there any way we check our own training records? Because I see you guys request my department, so we can either by take off that.
Are you talking about safety trainings or all
just mandatory trainings you do?
And actually, HR doesn't track it, it's risk management. And so in my communication, I will talk about how you can please call to get the information. Right now, you can log in as a place that I believe you can kind of.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to work on is getting a different system, a learning management system that can track training, certifications, accomplishments, and also employees can help track that. Because, you know, this whole thing about I started 10 years ago here, I've done a lot of professional development, but the only person that knows it is because I can't really dump that anywhere. So that's one of the things that we would like to see what with. But as you know, it's a
problem. The other thing is that I've done training and then I've had people ask me to take it and I go, I've done it and then I have to prove that I've done it. And that's been a problem. So, and it just wastes time. Yeah, so, get my whatever I got to do, but I never did it. I don't want to, you know.
I know it's frustrating.
Yeah. You
have that.
So that's a real pain.
And we're trying to work on it and just manage to do it, trying to make sure that we're doing it. Quite a few. People always ask me if I'm tracking this list of that we can go back to the supervisor. You know, we don't have a list anymore of people that are following.
One of the things I think we asked for is if this was going to be required for supervisors.
That more flexible.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be rolled into that. Okay. Again, I will talk to the chairman about that.
All right.
Any other questions?
Just for clarification, is it FY15 or FY16? So we're currently in FY15 now, right?
Yes, we are. So what month are we in?
September. Are we hoping by the end of FY15?
Yeah, I think maybe January or June, and I will confirm with the chancellor.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Brad?
And then if someone goes to the bullying awareness training and goes, well, I think maybe I am being bullied. What should they do? Or if they don't go to the training, but they think maybe something weird is going on, what should they do?
Well, I would say first to your supervisor, unless your supervisor is a problem. If your supervisor is a problem, come to HR and talk to your HR consultant or phone, or if you're the Hartford Association. And let's start there. But if it's not your supervisor, it's not a coworker, if you can call the supervisor, but they're in charge. And we have to start at that level. If your supervisor doesn't address it or doesn't know how to address it, then we can move up to the next step. That's right.
Are you also doing the detection of minors?
No, I'm not. That's risk management.
Well, that's a check.
Yeah. But that's online, I believe, and that's been cumbersome. Because I thought I had completed my training, then I was told I hadn't. So it is frustrating. One of the things that I just want to mention that TAC is working on is trying to get all of our training in the Mercy for Admin Services right now in one location. So we have several websites with several different trainings. And as a new employee, you do not know which website to go to. You do not know which trainings are mandatory, which are just good to have, and what you may need for the job. And so TAC has put together a task force that brings together all of the training from HR, risk management, safety, all of them, into one website where you can go one page, look at all the training, click on register. We're also creating succession planning in there, so if you want to be Brad, you can go through the training where you may want to stay in order to be HR, or be longer process, obviously, but it's worth it. That's the goal for this task force. So it's one of my frustrations is to try to find which trainings are out there, so we can have information.
So a great final point for that would be you sign in and see how much you've already taken and how much is still required.
Just that sounds like that's what Jessica.
I'm just saying, if you don't get all the way there,
yeah.
Where I want to be.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to find out the benefits of now state worker time. So it's causing me a lot of problems.
So, Brad, has this task force discussed the fact that we teach thousands of students?
Brad, what maybe does? I'm not going to solve world peace here.
No, I'm just saying, because, I mean, it's not to have another pane of glass, but if we already track academic records, we track training records, we do the same banner workflows, and if you're going to learn banners, that's what you just figure out how to track all your employees, students that have to.
We're all in.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So one of the things that we're doing is, one, we're going to get all the training from one location, and then we need to figure out how we're going to track both the two pieces, and right now I don't know if it's going to be Banner. I don't know if it's going to be some other LMS system. My experience with Banner has been, I think, difficult at times for people.
Yeah, or Blackboard, it's difficult in Banner, but I'm so access first and then tracking.
Yeah, and tracking for me would be, I mean, I want it to be very simplistic, and something that we already have or something that we're using because we have. I mean, I can go through the departments and I bet everybody's using different tactics and how to propose. I mean, there's tons of different mechanisms to use one that we share throughout the whole system. And that means the other companies as well. That's my goal. It's a big one. The task force is just trying to take little things at a time. And one is just trying to pull everything together. And then we need to look at whether they're value added. Are they serving a purpose? If you could change the positive, if you could just one more. So a big challenge.
The questions? Anybody on the phone? Questions for Brad Lapa? All right. Well, Brad, thanks for coming.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you. I went to the book.
Oh, yeah, that's correct. I made it almost. I didn't quite make it beer. I realized I'm only there today. That wasn't the place I was supposed to be there. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
Sure. Thanks for coming.
If you have any questions, you can always call or email me. My dad's not fine.
Cool. Yeah, we'll be looking for that memo. Yeah, we've got a term for the committee that has asked some questions, and I don't know if you got that data, but we're looking for some of the term funded employees that we have. What
and I believe it's that already the management budget today.
Excuse me. Yeah, we've actually talked about that. But we also have, like Jesse just mentioned, we've shown some of the last 24 years. That doesn't seem like some. So we have a number of questions, so I'd like to come back if you want. Yeah. We have some of that data to maybe address some of the issues that.
And then we are already, the policy really hasn't been signed yet, but we are working with some term funded on the school, trying to help them just like primary law. So absent the policy, we've kind of just started not doing that. So that's something. So I can come back to the next chat conference if I'll be able to say the data.
Cool,
that'd
be great. The next step,
okay. Yeah, that is up.
That is up. October
26,
right?
Too far in the future.
I'll look on the calendar.
22nd. So the 22nd. We'll send you the email invite and remind it. So,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
So much.
Chancellor call in at all? Okay. Okay. So Chancellor will be here. Eric, you wanna come up here? Come here. This is Eric Seestad is the chief human resource officer for statewide. I asked him to come talk to us today a little bit more about the furlough policy, the proposed furlough policy, proposed language, and maybe answer some questions, talk a little bit about how this came about, and maybe kind of explain motivation behind that and where we're at in that process. Because a lot of us, when we initially saw that, got a little scared.
Well, yeah, I can understand that because for most people, the idea of furlough, the only idea that people have seen is what the feds did, which is a terrible way to do any kind of furlough, just shut everything down and, you know, nobody gets paid or has benefits and things like that. And that's not the intent of what this could look like. It's not the intent to have to use furloughs. It's basically... it started out as a discussion that, you know, as costs continue to become an issue and our funding declines, we need to take a look at some of the tools that we have to save money and reduce costs. And I know you all at UAF have been very aggressive in pursuing some cost reductions. And
really taking a look at, you know, how to make things as efficient as possible. Unfortunately, though, when you look at costs, you know, the biggest percentage of our budget is people. So, you know, if you dip too far down and you become as efficient as you can and you've trimmed all the fat without looking at people, eventually you have to start looking, you know, how do we continue to you know, pay our bills while at the same time not hurting our employees. Up until this time, there's really, in board policies, there's really been nothing short of layoff to affect employees. That seems a little extreme, you know. Budget's tight, you don't want to just start pointing at people and saying, you know, you're gone. So the idea of furlough is a more surgical approach, I guess, to reducing costs. It kind of shares the pain a little bit with everybody as opposed to, you know, having several people that have extraordinary pain by not having a job anymore. So we were asked to pursue it and to the policy itself, if you read the policy, yeah, the policy's scary because it's vague and nebulous. It doesn't really say anything other than, you know, furloughs, you know, could be authorized. Where the fear reduction comes in, hopefully, is the development of the regulations that go along with the policy itself, which is also why the president has asked that a task force be put together, or staff from around the system, to put together the regulations, which are basically the operationalizing of the policy. You know, how's it going to be implemented? Who's it affect? What's it going to do? You know, things like that. And that task force meets for the first time on Thursday afternoon. We've invited staff from all over the system to be part of that. We've gotten confirmation from all the universities that they're going to have staff representatives there so we can start talking about what the regulation would look like related to this. I have a couple talking points that I'll be sharing with them. And basically what we want to do, again, is to impact employees as little as possible. I'll be honest with you, a furlough is a pay reduction, pure and simple. I mean, that's how you save money. You cut people's pay. Federal government did it by, you know, cutting everybody's pay for a few weeks. Said, oh, that'll take care of it. How it works in the real world, though, typically with the furlough is you cut people's pay by a little bit. You know, how little bit is that? I don't know. How much deficit do we have to try to make up? I've been through these in a couple places. When I was in New York, the way it worked is that for exempt employees, for instance, it could work where you get reduced, your pay gets reduced by a certain percentage. And when I was in New York, they needed a 5% pay cut. They cut everybody's pay by 5%. But at the same time, they gave us 9 days, deficit reduction leave days, that we could use at our discretion. I mean, it keeps the business going, keeps everything open, classes are running. You know, and the use of that time is at your discretion as opposed to just saying, you know, we're off for 3 weeks with no pay. It could go a lot of different ways. We could, those are the options that we want to explore with this group is that, you know, is it a chunk of time where everybody's off? Is it, you know, these discretionary days? Is it, you know, and for people who are overtime eligible, it can be as simple as saying, well, we know you work 40 hours a week, now maybe you work 37 and a half. A while to get paid 37.5. That's it. Okay. The idea is to minimize the impact. The idea is to make sure everybody gets paycheck every 2 weeks, you know, no matter what. The idea is to make sure that everybody's health insurance continues. Those kind of things. If you do it that way, about the only impact that we can see, other than, you know, in your take home pay, is that depending on which it doesn't depend on which one. It does impact your retirement contribution, obviously, because everybody's contribution to their retirement is based on what you're making. So if you're making a little less, contributions will be less. For those who are in PERS, that one's a little more complicated. We're still trying to work out how it would impact them, and I think we're just going to have to have a meeting with them. But I don't think it's as much as of an impact as some people do. Because again, if we reduce people's pay and give you discretionary leave, it's a paid leave. You know, it's just you're making less money associated with that. So it's a detail we have to work out. Yes, sir.
Well, I have a question on how does it affect the unionized groups?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's a discussion that we have to have with the union, because I think in 60-70 it looks like we can reduce hours, in which case that's something we discuss about. Because you're right. I mean, in the union contract, it doesn't specifically talk about furloughs, but it does talk about layoffs,
right,
or management rights. So it's a discussion that down the road we're going to need to have with them to clarify it when we decide to do it, because I'd much rather do furloughs for the union people than layoffs.
Yeah, my concern is that since we have unionized and non-unionized groups, you know, how are they going to perceive each other as far as, you know, you're not participating and we have to, or that kind of thing?
Actually, it's been made very, very clear to me from every conversation I've had with administration that it will affect everybody in a unit. Part of the policy says that either the whole university or a unit of the university could be affected by furloughs. A unit in the policy is defined very broadly, but it could be anything from one of the universities, like it could be just UAF, or it could be a department of the university. But it's very clear that if a unit is identified, every single person in that unit, union, non-union, administrative, non-administrative, would be affected by a furlough or a reduction in cost. If we weren't able to negotiate something specific with the unions regarding furloughs, we would just lay off the comparable number to make up the difference in cost. But there's not going to be any exemption along the way just because of that. Yes?
Wait, is there going to be a discussion about a voluntary furlough for instance, taking a survey, even what people kind of did, here's how many hours are going to jobs?
We talked about it. Again, you know, and that's the plan with all this, is that, you know, I know we've gotten some feedback from the Staff Alliance blog and things that we're talking about, how maybe the policy should say that furloughs are a last resort and layoffs are a last resort. Furloughs are probably, you know, getting closer to a last resort. And, yes, you try to do as much voluntary as you can. I know UAF has already, you know, started pushing out that people want to work a reduced schedule. You want to work 11 months. You want to, you know, things like that. And that several people are interested, right?
There came a flooding budget committee.
Yeah,
one of the. And that technically was already an option. But that wasn't really known among employees, and so that's being, I wouldn't say pushed, but that's being more advertised in a way so that employees know about that and supervisors know about that. Because there are certain jobs where that's not really an option. You know, there are things that have to run, but there are certainly jobs where that is an option. And if an employee doesn't know about that, they may not think about that, or if a supervisor doesn't know.
So will that be tracked as part of the cost savings?
Everything's going to be, you know, in terms of what's going to save costs. I mean, and again, we're trying to, you know, find ways to reduce the costs that impact employees as little as possible. You know, we wouldn't start with furloughs, so, you know, we go through everything else first, and like I said, you've got the planning and budget committee, you know, it's been working on this for almost a year or more now, right?
It's made its recommendations.
Right.
That was one of them.
Right, so, we're taking a look at things, but unfortunately, the picture for fiscal year 16 isn't looking all that bright, and board just turned down tuition increase, too, you know, but we've given us $4 million across the system, so that's another bite out of, you know, next year's budget that we're going to try to figure out what to do. I'm purposely not painting a rosy picture, but again, you're right. Anything voluntary we can do, anything innovative we can do, and I heard you talking earlier about your value stuff, and I know what I keep hearing is one of the values should be innovation. And I'll put in my little commercial to say, you know, you guys are the ones that are going to solve this. You know, it's not going to be me. It's not going to be the president. It's going to be ideas coming up from you. And now's the time to be more innovative and, you know, start pushing with your supervisor to say, hey, we can do this better, faster, quicker, cheaper. And, that's where we're going to save this stuff. Here's my commercial. But I do believe it. That's it.
So my question is, how does
change in accruals, no change in life insurance. I don't know what I've been for the long-term disability, but none of those things that would be affected. That's the plan, anyway, not affect any of those. And to make sure that it's stated that it doesn't affect those things. And again, I think we could structure it in a way that would happen. Other comments or questions for Eric?
One question I had, or the most troubling thing I saw in the draft policy was the line of prospective temporary reductions in pay. And what I thought that might mean would be, well, maybe instead of furlough days, you just get a pay reduction for a certain period of time. And I imagine that would mean, well, now your supervisors could say, well, great, we don't need to worry about there being less time, you know, there's no furlough days, they'll just do the same amount of work just for less money. What I hear you saying, and that you confirm, is that your thought for that was not just a flat reduction in pay, it would be with
right.
kind
and
of
it,
additional
you know,
pay days.
Again, it would be very important for me to make it clear to people that a reduction in pay comes with a reduction of effort. You know, if we're asking you to cut, you know, your salary by 5%, we're going to ask you to cut your workload by 5%. You're right. It'd be absolutely unfair to say, yeah, we'll cut your pay, but, you know, you're still going to come to work 40 hours a week. Work just as hard as you always did. But to me, a reduction in pay comes with the trade-off of additional days off. Something.
Is that something we could add to policy?
I think reduction
in pay also
implies
then a reduction in effort.
Yeah, some of the talking points, you know, that I'll be proposing to this group on Thursday are, you know, furloughs can take, you know, several different forms, and, you know, I'd like to see all of those reflected somehow in the regulation. You know, that way it's discretionary, but you're right, you know, the reduction in pay, you know, comes with a reduction in effort. It should, you know, that I think it should be reflected anyway, I think. But yeah, I understand that. You know, it's not the intent. I know everybody keeps saying that. Well, this is going to have a loss of productivity. You know, if you cut people's pay and you know they're not working as hard or as long, there's going to be a cut in productivity. It's like, yeah, no kidding. You know, I mean that's kind of the decision the legislature has made. They don't want to give us as much money. We're working as hard as we can. I don't think there's anybody that's just sitting there twiddling their thumbs all day. But, you know, I'm sure. Present company excluded, of course. But I think, you know, what they understand is, and I know, there's tons of dedicated people that are like, well, you know, we still got to serve students, and we still got to do that. Well, yeah, but guess what? Maybe your office isn't open, you know, as long. Maybe it closes a half hour earlier. Or, you know, maybe the trucks get parked a half hour sooner. And, you know, things just don't get done. And that's the part that I think administration this year is going to be, you know, emphasizing to the legislature when they go in for the budget cuts. It's like, you know, we've gotten lean and mean. You know, we've trimmed what little fat that we think we have. And guess what? You start cutting us more. Services get cut more, you know. Things don't get done quite as fast, or they, you know, don't get painted quite as quickly, or, you know, students wait in longer lines, and all those things happen. You know, they get jammed in, classrooms with more kids. And that's just kind of the nature of it, because we have to show them that. You know, I mean, it's starting to happen, but we've been nice. We've been sucking it up and trying to, you know, pretend like everything's normal, and, you know. But people from the outside see that and say, well, gee, you must have had a lot of fat, you know, that you can still do this and we keep giving you less money. You know, and that's part of the emphasis that we have to show them is that, you know, less money comes, you know.
Thank you. can you hear me? Hello?
Thank you.
do think innovation and empowerment are going to, you know, be part of our message out for a long time to come. Because, again, you guys are the ones that are going to solve these things. But, also, by the way, that note that's going out about the annual leave, that says, there's also a paragraph that I put in there that said, and supervisors, make sure you let your people take their leave.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know some of the complaints that we've heard is that, you know, I don't want to take leave because when I come back, you know, my work's still waiting for me. I don't want to take leave because, you know, my supervisor gets mad when I'm not here. You know. So I've got to change the supervisory attitude too. I didn't throw in the regulation too. It says that anytime you get leave denied, you're allowed to ask for the blank, the written reason why. From your supervisor, feel free to invoke that if somebody's listening. You didn't hear it from me. And again, there are, you know, there's good things happening. There's new things happening. You just have to take a look at some of the stuff that we're doing to see if the old ways are good ways. If not, how do we do it different? You know? Tough times, but we'll come through it on the other side. You know, New York State was going through the same kind of thing. You know, the city system was cutting things left and right, but, you know, every college is still open, and, you know, most employees are still there, and, you know, benefits still keep going, and pension's strong, and, it's a tough call right now. And to head off one more thing, if, you know, somebody say, well, let's cut health insurance or cut that darn wellness program. I'll put in another commercial for the wellness program. Not that I clearly participated in it, but wellness program has been shown to reduce costs. So some of the research shows that for every $1 you spend on wellness education for your employees, you save about $4 in actual costs. So, you know. But how do you do that? You know, how do you prove it? You know, how do I know that, you know, by starting a walking program, you prevented a heart attack? You know, I guess it's the same way. I don't know how many pregnancies we prevented by covering birth control pills, but, you know we did. And that's kind of the same with the wellness. You know, you save heart attacks, you save strokes, you save, you know, a lot of things. The wellness money to me, anyways, is well spent. And again, it helps save us $4 million.
Is that like research or research that
mm-hmm.
we've done?
Yeah, it's not anything we've done.
Is that available at all?
Yeah, there's a couple of them out there. Like I said, depending on which one you look at, it's anywhere from $3 to $6 for every dollar you save. I think Erica Van Flynn's got some of the more recent research on it. Because, again, that was something, you know, we had to justify when we were looking at, you know, spending what we're spending on. It's not just, gee, this sounds like a really cool idea. You know, it's a really cool idea, and it, you know, can improve the health of our employees, you know, just like all that smoking stuff. I don't know where that's going. They talked about it at the board meeting, saying that, you know, that there's this push on system-wide to go smoke-free. Help the employees in the long run, but I think I'm going to have some twitchy employees, you know, unfortunately, too happy if they can't smoke anymore. But it works. So we got to work on that, you know, so we got to have programs in place and all that stuff. I actually met a guy, as you know, he's been on TV here. I've seen his television commercials. He's willing to come up and talk to me about smoking and his personal experience. Yeah, George Patterson, yeah. Yeah, really nice guy. But, I kept looking at him though. You look familiar. What do I look familiar? So we're going to try and get him up here.
Okay, any further questions for Eric?
We're running a little bit late. Well, thank you again for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Like, you know, I'll reiterate what Brad said. Don't feel, you know, anytime you want to contact me, as well, feel free. Try and contact Brad. That might, you know, Brad likes that. He likes to get phone calls. So I carry this around.
It's not that bad, and the more information you get, the more that fear gets reduced, the more anxiety gets reduced, and we're trying to keep the lines of communication open, and by all means, feel free to get back.
Well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Take a quick 5-minute break. Thank you for coming back. We're back with Chancellor's remark.
Well, thank you. At first, I want to apologize for being late, but I was at the Alaska Rural Energy Conference. They put me up on the dais and set me up to where I couldn't leave without being really rude to the other speakers. And, you know, the university never wants to be rude to 300 people from around Alaska who mostly come from our service area at UAF. So I'm glad you were still here by the time I got out of that meeting. I think I got just sort of a good news and bad news kind of week coming out of the last week's Board of Regents meeting. There were some challenges at that meeting, but let me start with a couple pieces of good news. One, I know you've all been hearing about the Title IX University of Alaska, one of 80 or so universities around the country that the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights is looking at to see how are we doing. And two pieces of good news there. One, our submission, which came from the three universities with a lot of effort that really described everything we have done in recent years. We heard back that it was, they thought it was exemplary, that it was comprehensive, that it was well organized. And so for all the staff involved, and some of you may have been involved in some of that data collection, thank you. It's always good to have that kind of external validation. The other is that we did make set up mandatory training. As of the 12th, which is the last report I have, 89.9% of university faculty and staff, regular staff, have completed that training, which is really remarkable to go from 0 to 89%, 40% in the last month alone. So we're approaching that 100% we were looking for. Safety training, the mandatory safety training, we continue to improve. Went last month from 83 to 85% now have completed all the safety training. When we started this effort, we were in the 40s. So really important. And you know, it's not just about checking the box that we've completed the training, but it really is to be thinking about how we ensure we have a safe workplace, how we ensure that people don't get hurt. And it's not just because it saves us money when people don't get hurt, but it's also a much better workplace and much better for the people who aren't hurt there. So I'm going to keep pushing safety as long as I'm chancellor. So you'll keep hearing that from me. The Board of Regents had its first look at the budget last week. They're not happy. There are some members of the board who think we still have fat at the university. There are some members of the board who think we have too many programs and think we need to cut programs. What programs those are, I'm not sure, because whenever I look at them, every single program has people that are benefiting from the program. When I look at our research programs, we're doing exciting stuff, and I want to be doing more. When I look at what we do to serve students, I want to be doing more than we are. So I'm somewhat in I don't know where that sentiment is coming from. You know, clearly there are concerns at the level of state revenue, and that is an area of concern. You know, there's not one, I don't think anybody could name one strong state economy in the United States that doesn't have strong research universities. By the same token, I don't think you can name any strong research university that isn't supporting a strong state economy. So we have to do that as well. The board, on the capital budget, the primary issue for capital spending is the completion of the engineering building. That aligns with Governor Parnell's priorities of addressing the things we haven't finished first, and then on deferred maintenance, we have several research projects in there as well that are really designed to say how can we support the development of the state's economy. And again, things like the unmanned aircraft business are the kinds of things that we're doing that help build a safe economy. The board had some discussion of two additional projects they'd like to see moved into the nearer term. One, the Community and Technical Colleges Fire and Emergency Services Training Center, combined with a new fire hall here on this campus, and a culinary arts facility expansion in Anchorage they'd like to see. We had a chance to see UA Southeast new dormitory, the freshman dorm on the campus. It probably has the best view from a college dormitory in the United States, looking out over the Mendenhall Valley. Really, really neat. I'm envious. We'll have to make sure we have more rooms that can see the entire Alaska Range and Denali to keep up with that. The board turned down our request for a tuition increase. The administration had proposed a 4% tuition increase to bring in about $4 million system-wide. And really, that's to address the fact that we don't have new revenue sources for half of our pay raises. Every year, compensation goes up. The state government, for the recent years, has been funding 50% of the increased cost of pay. The other, we're on our own to raise that 50%. So for us, you know, somewhere on the order of 15 or 20 positions we won't be able to pay for. Whether that ends up being vacancies or layoffs, we really won't know until we see the rest of the budget. But the picture isn't very pretty. We know state revenues are challenged. If we got the same amount of money we got this year from the state, we'd be looking at having to cover half the cost of pay raise, probably about $3 million. We'd have to cover any other inflationary costs in our fixed costs. We're probably looking at $7, 8, 9 million. And if we don't have this revenue to support a portion of that, about the only place to go is reducing staffing. And I'm really concerned about that. But ultimately, the Board of Regents governs this university, so that we have to live with that. One piece of potential in going back to the facility side that we're looking at, the board approved the sale of one parcel of land across Geist Road in what's known as Spinell Park. And if you think about the area from the right at the corner of Geist and the Park Highway, that's all been cleared right on the other side of the road. About 6 or 7 years ago, the owner half donated and half sold that to the University of Alaska. And the idea was that donation value was to support UAF expansion. Maybe we do it Tech Park or something like that. And then the portion that was paid by the Land Grant Trust Fund will be paid back as that develops. So a portion of it sold, about half the revenue will go in to reimburse the Land Grant Trust Fund. The other half has been set aside for potential use by UAF for a facility acquisition. If we can make it work, we've been looking for some time at property that might make for a potential expansion of the UAF Spinell House, the child care operation. And as I think the longer-term members of this group know, addressing the child care issues for faculty and staff has been a high priority of mine since I've been chancellor. We've not yet found the right facility, but this helps us pay for it potentially. And if everything works, we could see an expansion from the current roughly 30 spaces to roughly double that. So now that doesn't solve the child care problem, but it makes a real dent in it, and having something right next to campus would be a plus. So I'll report more on that as we progress, but I'm really hopeful that, you know, that allows us to expand the lab school program to train more early childhood educators and then to pay for the operating costs of the facility by offering child care, expanded child care. You know, I think that was the first issue that the staff council came to me with when I was appointed interim chancellor 6 years ago. Sorry it's taken so long, but I hope we'll get there.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. Friday, one more thing. I've asked you to look at the issue of tobacco-free or smoke-free campus. The Board of Regents has scheduled action on a policy for the December meeting. I think the only dissent on the board with the idea of going tobacco-free with a policy at the December meeting is that several of them would like to do it at the November. I think the votes are there regardless. You know, I've asked you for your opinion. I have held back on making my recommendation to the president until I hear from this year's staff council and this year's faculty senate. But frankly, I think we're going there. It's really now just a matter of what's the policy going to say. And so for the group that's been working on that the real question is it tobacco-free or is it smoke-free? Does it include smokeless? Does it include vaping? And are there any permitted areas whatsoever? Arizona State University, for example, their smoke-free policy provides that on a public street that's within the campus, in a vehicle, is permitted. There are others that might say in a vehicle is permitted as long as it's not in a parking structure. Or others that would just say absolutely no tobacco use of tobacco products on university facilities, period. And again, does it or does it not include smokeless tobacco and electronic cigarettes? But I think to a large extent, the board is decided on that. They've heard testimony. I think we see more and more organizations here in the Interior Canada Peace Conference will go tobacco-free in all of its facilities on Tuesday and Thursday. So, I've been trying to be sensitive to, you know, we had a totally divided vote the last time, 389 to 389 on Twitter. So I tried to be sensitive to that, but I think the board has made up its mind. Certainly, influence over what the policy might say is there. Finally, I hope most of you will either be able to attend or stream my convocation speech on Friday, 1 o'clock. I'll be talking in greater depth about some of the things I said here and much more. And with that, I can answer any questions that members of the staff council have.
Chancellor, do you have any information about the weather dates? We've heard a little bit about whether or not there might be an option in the future for inclement weather.
We've been looking at a policy, and I expect it to come forward from the summit team sometime in the next couple of months. What we've been looking at is expanding the number of sick leave hours that accrue each pay period to add 2 sick leave days per year, and then expand the use of sick leave to include a declared emergency, a weather emergency at the campus level. And what that does essentially, you know, and we look at 2 days as sort of being the average of what seems to be happening among our campuses. So if it's declared, people could use a day of that emergency or sick leave. Still working on some of the other implications, because, you know, one of the issues that we've addressed, and I think I talked with the staff council before, is, you know, when we look at where everybody, we now have a map of where everybody at UAS Fairbanks campus lives, and some of those roads will be passable and others aren't. And so giving people the choice then of whether they use their emergency leave or come to work, that would be a matter of their assessment of whether it is safe to go to come to campus or not. Certainly we have some people who have to come no matter what, given their the emergency nature of their work, they would end up accruing additional sick days essentially out of it. So we tried to balance the interests that allow us to create a funding source and not overtax individuals' sick leave accounts. So that's where we're headed, but we don't have a final policy ready for review yet. But that's the general direction.
Is it expected that a policy will be prepared, you know, with the upcoming staff members people?
That's what we're focused on. That's what we're trying to get to, yes. We just hope we don't have any bad weather tonight.
In your comments, you said the Board of Regents is not happy with the budget. And I don't, if you can clarify whether you meant university system as a whole or targeting UAS.
There was no targeting of any individual one of the three universities. And each, I wouldn't say the Board of Regents. I would say members of the Board of Regents, because different people have different issues that they are most caring about. But the majority, by a 7-4 vote, they turned down the tuition increase. Some for reason A, some reason B, some reason C, and maybe some for no reason.
We have been working on the free survey, so I expect that to go in a few weeks. So I need to give you some data from UAS.
I'd be happy based on what we've heard at the board meeting to provide some ideas for how to craft that survey in a way that helps us know some of the nuances of what a policy might be. I guess, finally, I would say the Board of Regents does meet in Fairbanks on November 5th, I think it is, but Wednesday, the day after the election, and we'll be taking up the budget and taking formal action on the budget at that time. If you have concerns about the budget, that's an opportunity for members of staff council or anybody from the university to talk with the board. I would also encourage you that a lot will depend on what the state government makeup is. I hope that everyone who's eligible to vote is registered. If not, you have another week. And I hope everyone will vote if it makes a difference. And this is a great opportunity to talk with state legislators or prospective state legislators about why you think this place is important. And why we need their support for funding for us, for funding for scholarships for our students, for R&D, and for building the state economy.
Questions, comments on the phone?
Is it me you're talking about?
not quite yet, the movement. Thank you. I'm glad you're there. Thank you,
gentlemen.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, we'll go to government reports. The bill on the phone, and then did I face the field?
Okay. So it's my turn?
Yes.
Okay, let me first apologize for not being physically present because I had to drop off my daughter and other stuff and had to call in. But I could have done it knowing that, there was time. So, there is nothing much to report except I would like to get some input from the staff council. As you all know that we are going towards a common calendar and we are working on that. And the Alliance has started putting together a motion, I would say, to move forward with how the calendar will be aligned and who are going to work on it from all the three campuses and what is the structure of the calendar. The committee would be another stuff. I believe two things. I mean, there are challenges, a lot of challenges in this common calendar, coming up with the common calendar, because we have three different cultures in the three different universities. And also people are completely overworked and they are angry also at times on their schedules being changed and other stuff. So we are hearing a lot of that. However, we have to move forward because that's a mandate from the Board of Regents. And this is where staff becomes really critical, because we need some creative thinking on this one. Okay, really creative thinking on how to align the three universities into a common calendar. And I would really urge staff to provide us with some input so that I can take it to the Faculty Senate and discuss it with the faculty. And we have to rely heavily on creativity of the staff, which I believe there is. Okay, faculty are always overworked. They will go with whatever staff. They will bring some value, but you guys are the leaders, okay? And I'm unfortunately, I heard Chancellor Rogers saying that there will be some staff cut and other stuff. There may be, you know, not would be. I really am concerned about that, but because the staff always brings value to the university. So with that, I'll stop, and I'll get if there are any inputs now or later that Chris can send me by email. Or something, then I can bring it. We have the admin committee meeting on Friday. I can certainly bring it up there, and we would put it up for a discussion.
Naboo, can I ask then, just to clarify, are you looking for somebody to assist on that committee?
No.
Or just input and ideas?
Inputs and ideas, how to move. Okay, here is the critical issue. Okay, we have to have this aligned by 2016 fall, which means by 2015 fall, the alignment has to be in place for the chancellor to sign off on it and make it official. Okay, so we don't have a whole lot of time. We are talking about maybe 9 months, right? The problem is nobody has even a draft ready of how this alignment will take place. Okay, and there is a whole lot of issues that will come up after the alignment also. But we want to have something in place so that the Board of Regents then look at it and say, okay, now this is aligned. We don't have a problem now. Then the second challenge will come up with the faculty senates and the staff councils. And many other, bodies that how to deal with the issues. Okay, let us say, I'm just, this is out of blue. I'm just saying, let us say we shorten our 10 days closure to 5 days. I mean, just saying. I mean, that brings up a whole lot of issues also for staff, particularly, or for the faculty also. So there are challenges that will come up, and it will take at least 3 to 4 years for us to kind of come to stability after we aligned all the calendars. So here is where a pre-thinking and creativity helps a lot. And I'm just mentioning this. This is not about students only or not about faculty only. The staff will also be affected by the alignment. Okay, in a maybe in a good way, maybe in a bad way, we don't know yet.
Okay.
So, what is your email address?
It's dmisra, DMISRA, at alaska.edu, and anybody can look it up on EDR. If you type MISRA or Nicole can send it to you, it should be. Shouldn't be a problem.
You.
You're welcome. So basically what I'm trying to say is that is the major thing that we need to really get done. We have had discussions with Libby, our registrar, and again, the three campus registrars are talking to each other. My proposal to Libby was, and this was on a very personal basis, I said I'm not representing the faculty when I ask this, but I said if we don't have a draft in front of us or alternate drafts in front of us, nobody knows how to come up anything, nobody has time to come up anything, bring up anything from scratch. Okay, so Libby agreed to that, and I don't know what the status is, but if there are some input also to Libby, because she will be part of the UAF campus. We have all the three registrars and some faculty members, some staff, I think some students probably, I'm forgetting what the motion is, but I can, you know, ask David Valentine to send it off to staff council or staff, you know, your staff alliance, so that you guys can get a copy of that. But it's not passed yet. We are formulating it so that we can get started and get this thing done. And my goal is we need to get this done. A task is in front of us. The more we linger it, we generate anger from the Board of Regents, or at least not anger, but they're unhappy about it, which I don't want. The second thing is that once the job is done, we know what challenges we are going to face aftermath. Before that, we don't know anything. Third thing is how to get the culture back. You know, if anything is damaged due to this alignment, we need to bring that culture back up. We don't want to affect any member, any employee of the university, not even administrators, not staff, not faculty, not students. So basically, it's a challenge, big challenge.
Are there current documents on this already?
The only document that we have is the motion of the Board of Regents to align the three calendars.
And that's it?
Well, they have asked us, yeah, long back. I think I'll have to look up, but I'm thinking it is the Board of Regents meeting before the April 4, 2014. That one is available online. I can send, yeah, on the minutes. But, oh, you guys didn't know about this?
Yeah, I knew about that, but I was under the impression, and that could have been my bad, but I was under the impression Faculty Senate was working on a motion and had some documentation to back up a motion, but I'm mistaken that based on your comments.
Right, no. Our Faculty Senate cannot act on this yet unless the Alliance act on it, because, you know, the Alliance should then act on it and send it to each Faculty Senate. And the language is not really stringent. It's all it's saying is this is a committee composition that we are proposing for the alignment of the calendar. That's about it, okay? So the burden is now on the Faculty Senate to start working on it, but the Faculty Senate cannot work on it independently. There are staff concerns, there will be student concerns, there will be administrative concerns. You know, and so basically we have to look into, and this is not only this campus, it's all three campuses we are talking about, or all three universities. So basically it's a big challenge, but we don't have time. We have only 9 months, and as you know, the current calendar is not approved calendar. Chancellor hasn't approved the calendar. It's a calendar that has been put forth with the anticipation that the alignment will take place, and then the Chancellor will approve it. I'm just letting you know. Okay, so yeah, if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer. If you guys are concerned, I don't know what to really do about it. I am not concerned. We can come up with a calendar creatively that is aligned. But then we have to deal with issues that come up due to the alignment of the calendar.
Any questions for the Blue on this? Maybe we should. I'd like to look into this and see if there's an ad hoc committee that should be formed for staff council to assist with this.
I would
do
that.
Okay.
Libby falls into my unit.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to get for that.
Okay.
You know, I have a suggestion. If you actually contact Monique Music, who is your staff alliance president, I believe, or chair, I think you can get some more information on this one, on what they are planning in a statewide, you know, overview. And I think staff needs to get involved in this one. Otherwise, it's not going to be done. And that's my view. You know, I mean, we can't just work independent of the staff, because there are issues that staff needs to know and needs to pitch in. Okay, so I'll just wait for any other question. If not, then Chris, I have to leave because I have another meeting.
Yeah.
So I'll just hold on for a question or two and then leave.
Okay. Any additional questions?
So currently there is no proposed change or proposed calendar change yet. So you're hoping to get to that point?
At this point, the calendar that we have is still not approved by the chancellor. That's all I can say. We have to have a calendar in place, and the registrar's office has just put forward the calendar, but it's still not approved by the chancellor. So yes, there is no. To answer your question, we don't even have a starting point yet, and we are losing time, and that's the problem. Yeah.
Yes, I have one question. That's the UAM calendar that's not signed yet? And there's
yes, script. Yes, and I don't know about the UAA and UAS calendars. Yeah, the UAF calendar is not approved by the chancellor yet, as far as I know.
And you don't know the status of other two calendars?
I have no knowledge of that.
Okay.
Unfortunately. That's something that Monique can let you know, I think.
Yeah, well, I can check with her. Okay. Got a question for Dabu before we move on? All right. Thanks, Dabu.
Thank you. Yep, appreciate the time. Bye.
So do we want to create an ad hoc committee to look at the academic calendar, provide some feedback on this to faculty staff?
I'm
okay. So it sounds like Dabu is wanting staff input because this is going to affect staff as well. And for those of you that aren't familiar with this, what the Board of Regents wants to do is align the academic calendar across the three universities in the state. Okay, so you have the same start date for classes and the same spring break, the same Christmas break, same date. So that, yeah, this is out of the student view that if students are taking classes at multiple universities across the state, that they have a start date and break date for spring break and Christmas break, and grades are due and finals at the same time. Who is looking for input on that, because obviously that is going to affect staff. Anybody that wants to share that?
I offer just a counter point here.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say when he's not on the phone, but the way I see the academic calendar is it really is a faculty student issue. There are definitely things that affect staff, fee payments, when grades are due, you know, all of those offices that are student services oriented, but the big impact on teaching schedules and on student schedules. And I think we would want to get more information before we start jumping in there to see exactly what's going on, what's needed. Otherwise, we may just end up doing work that is not going to be helpful.
Yeah, sure.
Well, my question was related to the greatest starting point would be to put three calendars together and see how big the problem is.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've heard, I mean, that's correct. I've heard trying to get the grades more aligned with the students and the aligning world with the students.
The flip side and UAA spring break is 1 week, and UAS spring break is the next, you don't have spring break.
Right. Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Yep. Right, but I think no matter how they end up working it, either the PhD and different spring breaks, one of the universities is going to be off.
Going
to be working when their kids are on spring break or vice versa.
That's what I said. I think the first one is too possible. That's what I was doing.
And I believe that conversation has started, but I don't know if it's
been. I checked it. Find some college students that absolutely don't want their spring break at the same time as their younger siblings.
Okay. I can find out more from Monique and see what's there for documentation on this at this point. Before we create it, in a way that there is, there's very little information about this right now. There's, I think, obviously a lot of complications. I knew that first, if you like. I know the boost says 9 months is not very much. Maybe not for faculty senate, but I think 9 months in this body, we could get quite a bit done.
So for me, the second thing after you looked at the three calendars, see where they're not aligned, do why. And if it's because they're aligned with the local school district.
Well, it's even more complex than that. For example, Anchorage has a 4-day school week. So they don't take classes on Friday. And that is a complicated question. That involves scheduling a classroom. It does possibly affect staff if the specific department didn't want to have an admin on Friday or whatever. I do think it would affect staff.
It would affect staff, but the question like that really is the faculty question, and then it would be the staff's response to go, okay, how do we support that? Not really the staff to say, oh, you should have 5-day class periods.
Yeah, and
or you should have a 4-day class period. Yeah. That's not really a staff.
Yeah.
Not really something staff can say, we want that.
Correct.
The other thing.
There's one value to having staff input. I think that's full day. I think we need to deploy. Yeah. Yeah. You have people that are so locked into the issue that they have to deal with. It's very hard to see the elephant room and see something else. So, if another group was involved, it would be really less connected to it.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like the group is having a hard time finding faculty who can devote the time for the conversation. And maybe it is their conversation to have. If they don't have the ability to have those conversations, then they're looking.
Yeah, but I agree that it is a, in a large way, I agree with Pat that it's a mostly faculty and student conversation that needs to happen. I think we can provide some feedback on that, but that it's mostly their issue.
I think to me, it's a struggle to understand exactly what the problems that we present as issues are. Before we understand exactly what the alignment means. I guess I don't know exactly what they're trying to align. I mean, I know that you look online an academic calendar and shows where the breaks are. Those are simple things. If you can take three calendars, you can try and figure out what's the closest or what's the least best thing. But until we understand what the proposal looks like, it's hard for me to understand exactly what issues are. Mm-hmm. Seems like an academic issue for us.
Yeah, okay.
Financially, it's the first time. And there's cross-registering.
So we have a committee that, I mean, we're not going to be able to show up.
You might also want to talk to them, like the matter people, because I don't know when they were interested up, they flood the system for a while. But everybody on the same date, quick for problems.
Well, we got a motion on the floor on this for this committee. You want
to? I think we have to put the faculty senate. Ask for need to find a response if it, we don't really keep or this is your problem to deal with it, you know. But we got to give them a response to ask for our help. And I never want to turn down somebody who's going to say, hey, that's helpful. We want your help. We're looking for it.
I already got a volunteer for the chair.
Right. It could be that if you know, which is what somebody else mentioned, it could be that the Lou is just having trouble finding, you know, the people on faculty kind of look at some of these like more complicated issues. If that's the case, maybe staff council are the ones, maybe we're the ones that do the legwork into like looking at how our how this would affect the kind of stuff that allows faculty senate and the students to focus on that purely the academic provide, you know, the research and the research and how this would affect information outside of the university.
Okay, are we ready to vote?
Yep.
All right. Anybody call for a question?
I'm going to vote.
Okay. Based over, you don't need to call the question.
Okay. All in favor, say aye. When is the creation of the ad hoc committee to look at the issues with the academic calendar?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Yes.
All right. Motion carries. Cecilia, your next step. Hey, see if you want. Cecilia from ASUS. Yep.
All right, my name is Cecilia Hall, and I'm the Vice President of our ASUAS Student Government here, and I'm here on behalf of our presidential committee today. And I just wanted to give you guys, you know, some things that we've been working on getting our goals, like that. So, to get rolling, we've filled all of our attendances for our student senate, and we have hired a government relations director. We filled our RISE board, which covers sustainability appointments, and our Food for Thought community appointment, which deals with the dining services on campus, which is kind of a hot topic right now. Now that that's changed over, and we're trying to move that. So it's really exciting for us because none of these appointments have ever been taken care of this early in the process. So we're able to really get things going. So the things that we've been working on, coming up real quick, are starvation goals for this weekend. And we have a pretty big budget for that. We're going to but we also want to communicate with students something that might be aware of things going on. And in addition to that, we're hoping to bring even more awareness to Title IX after starvation goals. As you can imagine, our Title IX coordinators are incredibly busy right now. It probably will be for the next month and a half or so, but after that, we're hoping that we'll be able to put together a Title IX awareness fair, kind of a Know Your Rights event, to set up students with all of these different resources on the campus that, you know, that they may not be as connected to as we would like to bring more awareness to everything. Another thing that we're working on, this will hopefully get rolling on Thursday, is we've got a time slot with the Master Planning Committee to talk about space for a remembrance garden for students with disabilities by students. So we've got some legislation going with our student senate to get funding for that garden, and so we're just going to speak with the Master Planning Committee and get some space for that and see how that goes. And then the last thing that we've been working on really hard so far this semester is getting club funding going for all of our student clubs. That's one of my main tasks as vice president, to kind of dole out these different funding for the clubs and everything like that. So we form a club council that, you know, assesses all the different for all the different clubs and assigns them a appropriate amount of money. So we have about half of the club council formed right now, and by Saturday we'll have a full club council formed, and we should have all of our funding allotments sorted out by the end of the first week of October, which is considerably earlier than it usually happens, which is really exciting to get sort of plug that money in early as first week of October. That covers everything that we've got rolling right now. Any questions?
Because of all the news, we align with the numbers.
We're not right now, but it's definitely something that we'd like to,
even units, but yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
feel free to pat him on the back next time you see him.
Yep. Well, thank you guys very much for doing that. Okay, Chris. You guys haven't really met. Yeah.
We
are finishing up, yep. We are finishing up. We're doing the best we can to get out of here.
So our phone meeting will be up.
All right. Rural Affairs.
We'll see the attached report.
15 after Matt.
So
okay.
We're getting evicted, so see the attached report.
Okay. Staff Affairs.
So the report from Staff Affairs Committee is really consists of that smoking ban issue, and I think we need to take a poll of some sort of our staff community in order to get feedback to the Chancellor. Sounds like they've pretty well decided on a direction. Board of Regents has, but we still would need our input. But I am the wrong person to write a survey. I don't do well at writing the questions that are, you can give an honest answer. It would always lean toward one direction. So if there's somebody who would be willing to craft just a simple 2 or 3 question survey, the Chancellor mentioned today that he's looking for even nuances of how is this leaning? Should we take this further? The staff affairs folks just took on the issue.
There is the chancellor forum. If it hasn't met,
hasn't met?
Not so far as I know.
Okay.
If it has, then it's opening. But I haven't asked Janine if she's heard from anyone.
Okay.
So that's where I'm at, if someone could help craft that.
I'll volunteer to help craft that. Chancellor said his office can help with some of the language here, so I will do that. I got all of your information.
So do you just want to endorse to say that's what we want to do? I mean, is that reasonable?
Yeah.
Let's just do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for spitting through all that information. Appreciate that.
Awesome.
Yeah, a lot, Jeff. Okay, Nate?
Yeah, so we met a couple weeks ago for advocacy. The report's in there. I'd encourage you to take a look at it. There are a couple things that, including especially staff recognition, we talked about a little bit earlier. There is an online forum now, so in addition to, kind of having the forum of staff council meetings to sort of recognize your colleagues or anybody you work with, anybody you supervise, there's also an online forum that you can enter. If you're working with somebody or if you're just aware of somebody that's done kind of a stand-up job, either in our normal work environment or outside, on behalf of the university or on behalf of the surveying community, all of that, we're encouraged to kind of recognize people for that in kind of an informal slash formal way. But the online form, which there's a link to it in my report, and I'll also send it out probably periodically from now on, just to encourage people to nominate. Just for recognition, both these meetings and then also online with the blog and Cornerstone, hopefully in the near future as well. I'll encourage people to, take a look at that. And then the second thing that I just wanted to highlight was we'll have a proposal at our next meeting in October, and then also we'll probably bring it before staff council to have a formal volunteer lead day. At some point throughout the semester where staff would be encouraged to volunteer for half a day of their annual leave, and the university would hopefully contribute an additional half day of leave so that we can have time of year where everybody's kind of encouraged to volunteer and have incentives to do that. So that'll be
thank you. Moving quickly to external committee. I don't think the healthcare committee met. I think they're meeting today. So, anybody? Debbie, can you stop here? Okay. Staff lines compensation working group, we talked about the 3.1 recommendation from the president. Any
additional, Brad?
No, they haven't met yet, but I'll get the input of that.
Okay.
Good deal.
Next, external committee reports. Here. Anything you want to point out on the master planning committee?
Nothing.
We do need a representative on the people endowment committee. Anybody want to volunteer to serve on that committee? Not all at once?
Okay.
Okay, Jessica, thank you. The rest has written reports, so if anybody wants to point something out for Phil, then we'll get to the ad hoc committee report for term funds. Go ahead.
I just want to invite people that want to help us. David and I and Nicole did the last meeting, and we have the minutes there. We created a proposal. I want to point out that we had areas of further consideration. We wanted to ask for where to go from here. We'll have another meeting. But if you want to join our discussion, people like Jeff or anybody, please let me know.
Yeah, and we've got a commitment from Brad to be back here next month to talk about some of the things that you've asked questions about as a committee.
Yeah, we reiterated our questions about the numbers, and we asked for that to be expanded by representative, non-representative, and by unit.
Yeah. Cool.
Could I have a member of the ad hoc team?
Can you stop the recording?